the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. By some estimates, roughly 30% of all recyclables generated in the U.S. is shipped to China for reprocessing. That's right. Roughly one-third of your paper, plastic, and cardboard travels to Oakland, where it's put on a boat which sails to China, where it's turned back into new paper, plastic, and cardboard. Well, that might not be happening anymore.
On January 1st, China enacted a policy which includes a ban on the importing of 24 different materials considered recyclable. What are these materials? How will this ban affect U.S. recycling markets? And who might replace China as the leader in reprocessing our paper, plastic, and metal?
We'll speak with both Reese DeMille of Republic Services and Carolyn Walra of Recycle Utah about this new policy and program and how it will affect their recycling businesses and, of course, what you can do to help.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll talk about some good news coming out of China.
Yes.
In a huge step for elephant conservation, China finalized its near-total ivory ban, closing the world's largest domestic ivory market. What impacts will that have on demand and price of ivory? How will China monitor and enforce that ban? We'll speak with Ellie Pepper, the deputy director of NRDC's Wildlife Trade Initiative. She'll tell us all about that, as well as what's happening here in the United States on this front. And a hint, it's not as exciting as what's happening in China.
It's not such good news.
Not such good news.
Why am I not surprised? Well, we don't take your phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our email address, thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, that's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Support for KPCW comes from Park City Institute.
Join the Park City Institute for a gala evening as Pink Martini returns January 13th to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the George S. and Dolores Story Eccles Center in Park City. Toast the moments of discovery shared in our community for two decades. With music, special guests, and more, celebration begins at 7:30. Tickets start at $50 for this special event. Call 655-3114. Park City Institute is a nonprofit organization entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
Nell, you have a cold?
I do have a little bit of a cold, yeah.
All right. You're going to persevere?
Hopefully I can continue to talk through it and I won't lose my voice.
I know. So when I tell you to speak up, you're gonna do your best.
I'll start squeaking louder.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for coming in. And hey, we have a really interesting show because really it's about China, this show.
All about China.
Well, you know, and as China goes, so goes the world in many cases. And with respect to, in this case, recyclables, our trash that we try to turn back into recyclables, and in another case, ivory, elephant-based ivory, and what China is doing to make a difference about the trade of elephant-based ivory.
That's right.
In the world. And so we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. But first, we have Carolyn Walra from Recycle Utah. She's the executive director of Recycle Utah. And Reese DeMille with Republic Services. And we're going to start the conversation with respect to a new policy that was put in place. We knew it was coming. We talked about it back in the fall.
We did.
With you, Reese. The National Sword, as it's referred to. And it has to do with China's new policy and programs with respect to importing recyclable material. Because like I said in the intro, up to 30% of all the, let's say, paper, plastic, metal, glass, etc., recyclables that we produce in this country ends up in China. And they were taking it and reprocessing it and turning it back into, like, a new paper, plastic, cardboard, material and then it's put back out on the market. That is going to change, or has been announced. That's going to change. And how's it going to change, Reese?
Well, it really comes down to contamination. So it used to be that China had a certain level of allowable contamination, because knowing that all recyclable containers cannot be 100% clean, recyclable commodity. And so they have decreased that number significantly down to the point where it almost makes it, for some, it makes it nearly impossible to ship that clean commodity over to China.
So let's give some examples of what we mean by contamination. Let's say with respect to paper, what contaminates paper?
I can give a good example for after the holidays, our mixed paper bin. Right. Typically, we'd recognize a mixed paper bin as, you know, newspaper, magazines, mail. But at the holidays, everybody's putting their wrapping paper in there, their bows, and their plastic. You know, everything, you unwrap gifts and you make a big bag and put it in this bin.
Right.
And if that bin were to get it too contaminated with too much plastic, bows, you know, paper that doesn't
that
rip.
Material that you couldn't
tear. Totally. If it gets too contaminated, the whole bin will be rejected. So like at Recycle Utah, we took pretty close watch on that bin to keep it from getting contaminated. So it's not contaminated as in dirty, contaminated as in items in the mixed in with the commodity you're trying to recycle.
Right. So you literally had staff, yourself, and Haley and others inside that bin removing, looking for bows and ribbons and other materials that result in quote-unquote contamination.
Right, yeah.
And you did a great job at recovering that. And so it makes it acceptable to your buyers.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's the way the markets are getting. It's not dirty commodities. It's, you know, mixed commodities in with the commodity we're aiming to send to market.
All right. And so this is when you talk about China is now saying, you know, we need an even less contaminated, pure paper and cardboard and plastics, et cetera, before we will accept it. And you gave a percentage, which is a hard number to visualize, or even them to, I guess, to try to visualize of what are the percentages?
At one point, China was saying it had to be 2% or less, and then they went all the way down to 0.1%, which is, you know, almost nearly impossible.
So for every ton of material, 0.1% would be 2 pounds. 2 pounds of contamination within every ton is 0.1%.
Correct.
Now that it's gone up?
Now they are saying, well, that may be a little bit unrealistic, so they've gone to 0.3, and now we're hearing 0.5, but still that's such a
that's
small
50 pounds
number,
or 100, or maybe 10 pounds of acceptable material and for every ton. All right. And so this makes it a challenge for Recycle Utah, again, just focusing on paper, to make sure that you're sending out uncontaminated material.
Right.
And so you're going to be spending more time inside that bin or conversely educating our public on making sure that they remove contamination from the recyclables.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's paper. Is the same thing go with plastic and glass and metal?
You know, cardboard's one of them because a lot of items that come in a cardboard box are wrapped in plastic or they have wood that is stapled to it to make the box more sturdy, and or it has a wax kind of film over the cardboard. Those type of items cannot be, that's considered a contaminant with regards to a straight, clean cardboard load.
Okay. So we talked about 24 material. They've listed 24, and that's different types of paper and plastic, and then I assume some metals, aluminum, some other rough raw materials?
No. According to, you know, one article I see here, it says the ban would include most scrap plastics, including PET, PVC, polyethylene, and polystyrene, as well as mixed papers and slag. I don't know. I haven't been able to find a list of the 24 items,
right. but
that's kind of the overarching description.
Okay.
These types of plastics are kind of the packing plastics. You know, if you buy a toy, it's the plastic kind of surrounding the toy. Plastic bags are included in this. You know, yogurt container, single-use plastics. The only really good plastics on the market right now are like the milk jugs, you know, the kind of foggy milk jugs. Those are number two.
Yeah.
And then water bottles, like a number one, you know, the neck with the small top. Those are kind of the only good plastics. Everything else would kind of fall in the scrap plastic category right now. And that's where China's kind of really putting up a big sign of, we don't want this kind of plastic anymore.
Wow. And when you say good plastics, does that mean that there's still a market? People are still trying to buy those, to purchase
those? Right.
Those
are, at Recycle Utah, those are currently the only marks, the only plastics we're able to get anything for.
Get anything. So you're actually getting
paid. We can sell something for those.
For those.
It's nothing compared to other commodities, but
right.
There's still a market. Yeah, there's still a market for those.
What commodities are you paying to get rid of? Paying to get
The scrap plastics we just mentioned. Right now they're being turned back into oil and then used as oil in a factory in Morgan, Utah. So it's staying local, but we're paying to get that done. That costs us about $70 a ton to make that happen. So that kind of plastic, there's just no market for it. So you have to pay to get it disposed of properly. And
right. So you're paying to get rid of this. Right. So this just a reminder to those that drop off that plastic, that make sure you also drop off a dollar, a couple dollars, to help pay for that cost of getting rid of it. You're not making money off of this, off of these items. You may be on some others, cardboard. We'll get to that in a minute. But for plastics, make sure if you come to Recycle Utah, that when you drop off your plastics, you also drop off a few bucks.
Right. Yeah, and that's just the way the plastic market is right
now.
It's not a valuable commodity. There's too much plastic in the world right now, so the market's flooded. Nobody is looking for plastic. You know, there's plenty of plastic
around. And
so
with China's policy, it may be even more difficult to get rid of this plastic. So Reese said that, U.S. industries could pick up the slack and perhaps build some processing facilities, but that takes time.
Well, there's certainly conversation around what kind of mills are in the U.S. that would be available to receive this material, but that is going to take time, and that's still in the discussion stages, and obviously the World Trade Organization is still working with China. So I think what we need to do as purchasers here in the U.S. and also recyclers at the curb and in our homes is we need to be flexible, we need to be able to adapt. We need to, you know, look at what products we're able to put in our – I'll speak for Republic Services and the curbside recycle bin. Residents in Summit County can go to recycle.summitcounty.org and find out exactly what can go in the curbside bin. Now, that may change tomorrow. We don't know yet. One thing we can't do is panic about the recycling situation and just say, well, I'm not going to recycle. So – we need to make sure that we know what is still acceptable in our curbside bin, what isn't. It gets to Recycle Utah, and they take care of it there. But we need to be, you know, cognizant of the environment and what we're doing on a sustainability front, and just make sure that we adapt with the China and the other mills and those things where these commodities can be sent to.
And also you can help with curbside bin, too, by putting items separately. Like if you got a box, like, you know, a box from Amazon.com, take the plastic wrapping out of the box. Don't put the whole thing in the curb, you know, because plastic bags shouldn't be in your curbside anyway. You know that.
Right.
Take the care to ensure your items will get recycled by putting them in the bin correctly. You know, if everything's all trapped in a plastic bag, that plastic bag full of recyclables, the whole thing might get not recycled. So it's kind of on your end, do the part of giving it its best chance by putting commodities in separate from other commodities.
Right.
So do you see this ban impacting the packing and shipping materials that companies are using right now? Do you think that this problem with how to dispose of it or recycle it will start to impact things on the supply end?
Well, I think it certainly can. I mean, we don't know what that's going to look like overall yet because it's just getting started.
Sure.
And we don't know how this is going to affect China, where they look at this in 30 days and go, oh, well, we need more plastics. We don't know because they're having to manufacture this. So, and I certainly can't speak for what that's going to look like. So it could affect it. But I think right now our responsibility is to just make sure that we are making the curbside bin or what we take to Recycle Utah as clean as it can possibly be.
As clean as what? So kind of, again, remind our listeners, they have to kind of pick up their game as far as making sure they do the segregation, the separation, and the decontamination at home first. And we're good about that for the most part. You see that for the most part at Recycle Utah when people show up.
Right, and people show up. It's a lot of educating on, you know, like there's a lot of mixed materials entering the market, you know, something that's plastic and cardboard, explaining to them you have to separate the plastic and the cardboard. Yeah. Plastic goes here and the cardboard goes here. And, you know, you should be doing the same thing with your curbside too, you know, that separate materials out from each other. You know, clean doesn't necessarily mean you're scrubbing you know, the spaghetti jar as clean as possible before it gets recycled. It means, you know, that commodities are separate from each other. You know, take the metal top off your spaghetti jar. That means clean, in addition to physically not having spaghetti sauce still on it or something.
And at the same time, separate a dollar or two from your wallet and donate. How about that message? I'll keep harping on that. Reese, you have a bigger challenge because you see more contamination in those curbside bins because people, again, have that mindset that everything goes in the bin and it's all good.
Yeah, and we kind of, and this is not a non-sustainable comment, but we kind of encourage people to have the feeling of when in doubt, throw it out. If you don't know that it should go into your recycle bin, then toss it in your garbage. But you should know what goes in your recycle bin because we have resources, like I said, that website that will tell you exactly what should go in there. But what we can't use the curbside recycle bin is a second garbage can. So when our garbage can's getting full, I'll just throw it in the recycle bin. That is where
we see that.
Yes, absolutely. And textiles are really hard as well. You know, people think, well, people recycle carpet. They recycle, you know, other products. So I'll just throw it in there and let the materials recovery facility figure it out. We cannot do that.
Wow. Okay. Let's we got a few more minutes. Let's talk about cardboard. That's a big item. That's an interesting world going on there because you're seeing more cardboard with e-commerce growing, continuing to grow, and so people getting more and more cardboard delivered to their homes. A lot of them do the right thing and recycle it, but you end up seeing that. Are you making money off of cardboard?
Cardboard's still a good commodity. You know, not as good, great. It's not as strong as the metals and not as consistent. But I think cardboard will be one of the first things that changes with China, from what I've heard from the recyclers. You know that China ships a lot of everything, and cardboard's kind of a shipping product. And so if anything comes back, it'd be cardboard. But again, what level of contamination they're going to let us allow in will be the challenge for a lot of the U.S. markets.
And, okay, because I also read that with growing e-commerce, there will be a continued demand for cardboard.
Right, yeah.
So the more cardboard we use, the more cardboard that we're going to want to recycle. So, but again, try to deliver your cardboard in as uncontaminated a fashion as possible in both ways.
Right.
Okay. Electronics. This is important. You guys accept electronics. You don't accept Reese. Not in your curbside. Do not put electronics.
Correct.
In it. You have to bring it to Recycle Utah. But again, you pay to have those electronics taken off site and reprocessed.
Right. And so we do put that fee on people that bring electronics in, and it's probably the case for anywhere you go in Utah to recycle electronics. You know, if you're going to bring it to the Summit County landfill, they charge. I think Best Buy charges a fee. It's not recycling electronics is free in Summit County 2 days a year at our hazmat day. Other than that, you should plan to pay between $5 and $20 depending on the size of your item.
Yeah.
Mainly to help us cover the cost, and mainly it's just to pay for labor to someone to take apart your laptop and extract all the heavy metals that can be harmful, and then the plastic out of there and the other metal out of there. So there's just too many pieces in there, and we just have to pay someone to take it apart essentially.
There's labor involved in that. Skip the $5, Carolyn. Go right to 10 to 20 because I think Best Buy, from their website, asks for $20 to $25 to drop off electronics. So you guys are a deal. And I think our listeners should know that give a little more when you drop off your electronics.
Right. The best deal out there is the Summit County landfill. They're about 10 for anything, but nobody's really always willing to drive out there. So
right.
If you want to drive out there, you can save some money.
and you're getting a lot of glass?
Yeah, we've been off the hook with glass right now. We have the remote bins around town, and they are overflowing. We brought extra bins out there to support that. I currently have glass in my car that I've been bringing to work with me today.
Everybody gets glass.
So I think we learned a lesson in that we need to have a glass pickup at those remote bins weekly instead of biweekly during the holidays. And then the center, we've been hauling as much as every other day with glass.
Wow.
So,
and what's the market like in glass?
Glass is a good commodity. It's recycled locally. It's just expensive to haul. And glass, if you think about it, when you haul a load of glass, it's a lot of air because you can't you can't bale it, you can't smash it up or anything like that. You know, if we got a glass crusher or something like that, it would change the market completely for us. But hauling a lot of air when you haul glass, so it's expensive, not very full load, just the nature of the commodity. But it's a good commodity to recycle. Good markets for it locally. So,
all right, okay. And Reese, do you see any trends there in glass with respect to China's policy?
Haven't heard anything yet on glass. So the main thing is to keep it out of your curbside bin, take it to Recycle Utah or another glass drop-off place, and we'll get it to Momentum or another local recyclery.
Not that we want to suggest that people pre-smash their glass before coming to.
We're not ready to recommend that.
Right. But lots of people
The issue with glass is that it's just expensive to haul because it doesn't smash up. So.
And you would like to have a glass smasher or breaker, but that's
I don't know how to do the safety around a glass smasher or a breaker at this point, so we're just going to stick with status quo for now.
Situation as it is. All right. Last thing, you had a great Christmas. Give us some numbers. You said you got lots of cars.
Yeah, we probably saw 5,000 cars a week after Christmas. The day after Christmas alone, 800 or 900. Then it just did not stop. And into Saturday, Sunday, a day after New Year's, it was pretty busy.
Right.
We had lineup outside the center, so... Pushes the need for a new facility, which we've outgrown our current site pretty well.
You've outgrown
bursting at the seams, and then cardboard. We definitely did our biggest month, hands down, is December, January for cardboard,
and a lot of styrofoam too.
Yep,
and packing.
Right, a lot of styrofoam, a lot of cardboard, a lot of packing materials, and then the mixed paper bin and the glass. I think were our biggest hits. We're kind of still digging out a little bit, especially in the glass, the remote glass bins, but catching back up to normal.
All right. All right. Well, Reese, last word.
Recycle calendars. Recycling calendars for the county should be coming out within. Hopefully, they'll see them in their mailboxes this week, and that will have the every other week schedule for everybody in the county, curbside collection, and also a website address and some other information on there. And you can always go to the Summit County website and find out what the pickup collection is because they have the calendar on there.
And big kudos for Republic. You guys put a lot of educational messaging on there, and we appreciate that a lot on our end. It makes our life easier. You know, the big clear on the top, no glass or plastic bags, you know.
Right.
And then if you have more questions, there's more information here, and they even included Recycle Utah's website. So
good.
Thank you for that. I think that's good collaboration between us.
So two takeaways I get is that we need to do as good a job as possible at decontaminating our recyclables, make sure that it's paper with paper and plastic with plastic, and keep the organic or bio waste out of your recycling bin as best possible, and give a little more donation to Recycle Utah when you go there. It's not free. This stuff isn't. It comes with a cost to recycle a lot of material, and that cost may go up with what's going on in China. All right. Thank you, Carolyn Wara, Executive Director.
Thank you.
Recycle Utah, Reese DeMille with Republic Services. Always great to have you guys on. We'll follow this story as it goes through the year and how that changes in China. We're going to continue the conversation with China next after these words and to turn our attention to ivory, elephant-based ivory.
That's right. There's always plenty to talk about when it comes to environmental issues in China.
Yes.
And usually they're not quite as positive as this one. So we've got some good news from China, and then we'll talk about what's happening here in the U.S. as well.
It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Support for KPCW comes from the Crandall family, owners of the New Park Amphitheater, site of the New Park Concert Series, and numerous other community events.
Hi, this is Brenda with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage collection, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Thank you for helping to keep Summit County clean and green. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us during the second half of the show today is Ellie Pepper, the Deputy Director of NRDC's Wildlife Trade Initiative. We'll be speaking with Ellie about the big strides that China is making in this area, and we'll be talking about the not so great moves that the U.S. is making. Ellie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with, you know, the basics on this topic of ivory and elephants. Let's talk about the ivory trade. What is ivory valued for? Why is it traded? And where is that demand coming from?
Yeah, so the ivory trade is a global phenomenon, and it's actually the fourth largest criminal enterprise after narcotics, counterfeiting of currency, and human trafficking. So it's very large. Wildlife trafficking as a whole is estimated to be worth at least $19 billion a year. So, and that includes trafficking of elephants and other wildlife. But it's, you know, we're talking about something huge. And the reason that elephants are specifically targeted is for their ivory tusks. People around the world, particularly in Asia, value these tusks for mainly decorative items like sculptures, small figurines, jewelry, but really a lot of different things, chessboards, pool cues, serving utensils. I've seen lots of things made of ivory, unfortunately. And it's valued, I think, you know, it changes, but it's expensive. You know, it's around $1,500 a pound. And when we're talking about an average set of male tusks, that's, you know, 250 pounds or so, that's a lot of money, which is what's driving, you know, the poachers to kill these animals.
Wow. Just to follow up, is there medicinal qualities associated with ivory too?
No, you know, there are medicinal qualities associated with many other wildlife species I work with, like pangolins and rhino horn, but not elephant ivory.
Just so it's mostly decorative elements. That is the appeal for ivory. Okay.
So we can,
exactly.
And given that value, you know, a couple hundred pounds at $1,500 a pound, you can understand why, you know, people, especially in areas where there's a lot of poverty, would be driven sort of to do this.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the role here in the United States. What does the ivory trade look like in our country?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are surprised that the U.S. even has an ivory market. When I began working on this issue, you know, a few years ago, the U.S. was really our focus because we were trying to work with the Obama administration to put in place, you know, a total ban on ivory, which did happen in 2015. But before that, and, you know, I still think to some extent, you know, there has been a brick-and-mortar trade in the U.S. NRDC commissioned a study of California's ivory trade and found many stores. This was in 2015, found many stores carrying ivory products. And there's also a large online trade. And so the top three states, the top three markets in the U.S. are New York, California, and Hawaii. But fortunately, NRDC and other groups have worked to pass legislation in these states banning the trade, in addition to the federal ban that has been put into place. And the reason for doing both is just that the federal ban can only go so far in regulating trade within the states. So we wanted to tackle the three top states, too, to ensure that there is just, you know, no ivory trade happening whatsoever.
And when we say trade, we essentially mean any sale, right? So you can't have it on a shelf in the store. You can't sell it online. There's no sale, right?
Exactly. And you can't even, you know, the legislation in the states even prohibits having it on the shelves, as you alluded to, because a problem that we'd often confront is stores would just say, you know, oh, this ivory is on our shelves. We're not selling it. But the state legislation that has been passed says if you have ivory on your shelves, that's prima facie evidence that you're going to sell it. So that's just as bad as if we caught you selling it.
And this is ivory that they may have had for years. So this is retroactive in that sense. All their inventory has become illegal to sell.
Yes, and certain state bills had a grace period, so they could sell off some of it. That was a concession right. that had to be made to pass some of those bills. But it could be ivory they'd had in their stores for years. You know, that question really gets to why are bans so important and why is the trade such a problem? And it's because, you know, if you allow sales in old ivory, as the U.S. has done and many countries have done, people can make new ivory from elephants poached, you know, a month ago look old. So they use henna to stain it. They chip it. They crack it. They make it look old, thus legal, and then they pass it off on the market.
So there's another interesting phenomenon that I read about, which is the destruction of stock of ivory. And talk a little bit about why that's important or why that's necessary.
Yeah, so stockpile destructions basically means all these countries that have ivory stocks, especially from seizures when they, you know, find a wildlife trafficker with a lot of ivory, they seize the ivory, and they basically put it into warehouses, and it just sits there for years, and we call that ivory stockpiles. So the reason they're a problem is because a few reasons. First, they drive speculation. I think, you know, it's ivory sitting in a warehouse means, means to traffickers and others, oh, maybe this market is going to, you know, reopen, maybe this ivory will re-enter the market. So they keep acquiring ivory because they think it's increasing value. Another problem with stockpiles is they're commonly subject to theft. I think one report found that nearly one-third of all global ivory stockpiles have been subject to theft, which is actually just insane. So we've NRDC has been a big proponent of destroying stockpiles, and we've worked with other NGOs and the U.S. government, as well as New York State, to destroy ivory stockpiles. I think there's also just a public awareness purpose of destroying stockpiles to keep the plight of elephants in the news, to show in the U.S., I think, to show the world that we are committed to ending our role in the ivory trade. And, you know, largely to exert pressure on other countries and encourage other countries to ban their markets as the U.S. has. So I think there are many positive aspects to stockpile destruction.
When you say stockpiles, can you give us a sense of how many tusks are in a typical stockpile?
You know, it really, really varies. You know, China's stockpiles are so immense, and they haven't disclosed the amount, so no one really knows. But some of these destructions, I guess, are like 12 tons, 6 tons. The last U.S. crush was, I think, almost 1 ton, but a few years before that, they had destroyed 6 tons. So it just depends on the country and how much of a demand country, you know, they are, how much ivory enters their borders, essentially.
But is it safe to say that we're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of elephants worth of tusks that are stockpiled and hopefully destroyed every year?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to get a
sense of how many elephants we're talking about that are slaughtered to feed this industry.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the New York State actually destroyed some ivory, this 2 tons of ivory this summer, and that was about 100 elephants, equivalent to about 100 elephants.
Okay.
But to, I think, create an even better picture of how many elephants are slaughtered each year, we're talking about as many as 30,000 elephants a year to supply the ivory trade. It's a huge amount.
So on that, let's talk a little bit about elephant populations. I know that this is a complicated question, but, you know, how are elephant populations looking internationally? And do we anticipate that the ban will the ban in China will help with that on a short-term basis, or is that a longer-term vision?
The elephant populations are still in dire straits. Some scientists have predicted that African forest elephants could be extinct within less than a decade, and African savanna elephants are in a similarly bad situation. They declined by more than 30% between 2007 and 2014.
Wow.
I think, in 1930, there were between 5 and 10 million African elephants. Today, we have less than 500,000. So we're talking about a precipitous decline, and the current trends show that poaching has been declining since 2011. Basically, the current poaching crisis began around 2006, and it peaked in 2011. And since then, there has been a decline. Unfortunately, the elephant populations continue to fall. And, part of this is just because elephants are slow reproducers. They have a long gestational period, and they only have, one offspring at a time. So basically, they're just being killed faster than they're being born.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So these elephants are being impacted. And what's being done on the poaching side? We see China is trying to do something on the retail, wholesale side. Are there efforts being done to catch poachers, to enact laws that would reduce poaching and otherwise protect these elephants in the first place?
Yeah. So NRDC doesn't work directly on the ground in Africa because we don't have an office there. We don't have capacity there. But there are many groups doing amazing things on the ground in Africa, both, international organizations like the Wildlife Conservation Society and more local organizations like the Eagle Enforcement Network, which are basically these people are out tracking poachers and, arresting them every day and risking their lives. And I think a lot of the programs are training rangers on the ground in Africa to better confront poachers. And then, like you said, there is a lot of work to reform laws in African nations and increase enforcement, border enforcement, since a lot of ivory is obviously getting leaked out of those countries and ending up in Asia. We've been more focused on reforming laws in the U.S. and China, but, there's a lot of groups working on this, and that's the way it has to be because there is just so much to do to confront this problem. And with each adjustment that I feel like the conservation community makes, poachers and traffickers similarly adjust their operations.
So let's talk a little bit about the reform of the laws here in the U.S. and what's happening right now under the Trump administration as far as protection of wildlife like elephants.
Yeah, so under the Obama administration, the U.S. made amazing progress in the field of wildlife trafficking and in stopping the illegal ivory trade specifically. The Obama administration created a task force on wildlife trafficking and, most importantly, issued a near-complete ivory ban, as I said before. And it also really worked extensively with other countries to convince them to ban their markets, like China. Unfortunately, the Trump administration has moved us in the complete wrong direction on this issue. For example, in November, the administration announced it would begin allowing African elephant trophy imports from Zimbabwe and Zambia. Mm. And trophies are basically the heads of elephants that anyone has shot in Africa for sport, and they want to bring back into their country to hang on their walls. So basically, African elephants are protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, which means that to import their trophies, a finding has to be made by our government that the import will enhance the survival of the species. And that just isn't the case. And in 2015, actually, the Obama administration suspended elephant trophy imports from Zimbabwe because it just couldn't make that finding. Right. And nothing has changed in Zimbabwe, but the government is reversing course. You know, if anything, I think things are worse on the ground. The country just underwent a military coup, for example, and it's just historically been super corrupt and grossly mismanaged hunting programs. So, yeah.
So there's no justification for changes along these lines. Are you expecting to see more in this area?
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely, there has not been any changes. And that's why actually NRDC and the Center for Biologically recently sued the Trump administration on this decision. And yes, I do think we're going to see more in this area. The administration recently announced it was starting a International Wildlife Conservation Council. And the whole purpose of the council is to advise the president on the benefits of international trophy hunting. And I saw recently that a prominent bow hunter was selected for the council. So I think this is just the start of the pro trophy hunting decisions we're going to see from the administration. And you know, we're ready to fight each and every decision they make.
And I want to make sure I'm clear. Is this with respect to trophy elephants coming out of Zimbabwe or from any country that can now be brought into the U.S.?
So the decision that the Trump administration made was specifically with respect to elephants from Zimbabwe and Zambia. There are other countries where hunters can bring their trophies in, but many of those countries have similarly dysfunctional programs and, you know, that need to be addressed, such as Namibia and South Africa.
I want to go back to the trade elements, the ban that China is putting in place to but there is the online sale of ivory that has to be even more complicated and difficult to control, correct?
Yes.
I
think we're just starting to realize or starting to figure out how to grapple with that. You know, it is a lot. I think a lot of the trade has always been online, and a lot of the trade is going online, maybe in part because of these bans, but also in part because trade in illicit materials, all kinds of illicit items, has increasingly gone to an online platform. So it's something that certainly needs to be addressed. And I think, yeah, even probably more than on the ground ivory trade, because it seems like, you know, that's easier to tackle.
Right.
Okay, so with all of this in mind, what's happening here at home in the U.S., let's talk a little bit about this good news coming out of China. So they finalized a ban. Give us an idea of what the process has been to get to this point in China.
So in 2015, President Obama met with Chinese President Xi in the U.S., and they agreed to end their domestic ivory market. And that has been sort of the impetus for the U.S. ending its ivory market and for China also following through on this promise. So there were a lot of intermittent steps that China took, but basically last year, at the beginning of 2017, it announced it would close its ivory market within the year, and it did so. It began work immediately. It closed roughly one-third of its ivory processors and retailers in March, and the remaining ones by this December, which is when the ban became fully effective.
And so tell us about how the ban works and how they anticipate enforcing it.
Yep. So the ban is a total ban, save for one exception, which I think we'll see how this exception plays out and how problematic it is. But the exception is for ivory cultural relics of a certain age. And so they may be auctioned off if they meet certain requirements under China's cultural relics laws. Obviously, this, you know, points to the problem of allowing a limited market in old ivory can allow a market in new illegal ivory. So that exemption will need to be, you know, stringently enforced by Chinese authorities. As for enforcement of the ban,
No, it's, continue. I want to know how the they're going to enforce this.
Well, I think that's a very good question, and I think, you know, China's cultural relic laws in general, which apply to all different types of cultural relics, have been abused, and cultural relics around the world. You know, countries have had very important things sold off that they don't want sold off because of counterfeiting in their cultural relic laws. So I think that they're going to have to be really careful. And I am, you know, I'm not certain this exemption will work. I do think that there's significant pressure in China from the auction industry to retain this. And so I think we'll see how it plays out, but I definitely, it definitely troubles me. And I'm interested to see what happens. And regarding enforcement in general, I think, I do think the Chinese government realizes they're going to have to ramp up enforcement significantly if they want this ban to be successful. They've already started setting up a structure for investigations that are done in the U.S. to find illegal sellers. They are also, you know, increasing border enforcement since a lot of this trade looks like it's headed to countries bordering China, like Laos and Vietnam.
And then NRDC is also assisting with an education campaign, correct? So one aspect of this ban is just educating people about the ban and what it means. So what is, what does NRDC's role look like with that?
So NRDC has worked with the Chinese government and WildAid and several Chinese NGOs to develop ads and videos that just talk very briefly about the fact that there is a ban in China now. You know, the hope is that the more people that know about the ban, the less likely they are to violate it. And so we worked to develop these ads, and they were pushed out via social media and also by the Chinese government's official TV channels. And those TV channels reach over a billion viewers. So I think, you know, it was a really effective way, and it's ongoing right now, but it's an effective way to reach people, and I think more educational efforts will be forthcoming.
Has the response in China been positive, negative? Has it not really hit the radar? What does that look like?
You know, I don't really know. I'll have to ask my colleague in Beijing. I think my sense is that for a while now, you know, most people, specifically the younger generation in China, have not been that interested in buying ivory. I think it's a little bit of a throwback, and the public is increasingly looking at it as just something China, you know, used to do. And I think that's thanks in part to a lot of great educational efforts done by international NGOs about, you know, where ivory comes from. Well, it comes from an elephant, and you kill the elephant to get it. Simple things that seem simple like that to us, you know, are not exactly common knowledge everywhere. But I think have become increasingly acknowledged in China.
We just have a couple more minutes, Ellie. I want to make get clarification. This administration is allowing now trophy-based ivory elephants to be brought back from Zimbabwe, Zambia. Is the ban that was placed by the Obama administration in 2015 on the import of ivory products, is that still in place?
Yes.
Okay. So you still can't bring in ivory art or other relics into the U.S. That's illegal.
Exactly.
And you can't sell this. If I'm a gallery owner, I can't put ivory out for sale.
That's right.
That's okay. So
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes. I was just going to say, so that what the Trump administration did was just lifted a ban on elephant trophy imports.
Right.
So the heads of elephants. Yep. And it is significant because actually U.S. Individuals are the biggest, most frequent hunters of elephants in African nations. So by lifting a ban on the trophy imports, we really are encouraging U.S. hunters to go to Africa and shoot elephants and bring them back.
Yeah, it's reprehensible. My op-ed, one-word op-ed, reprehensible.
Yep. Agreed.
But I am encouraged. I am encouraged by what China's doing. I think we both Nell and I are encouraged by this. And I can't help but think of shark fins and the efforts China is making to try to change, educate, and bring awareness with respect to shark fins, because of the hundreds of millions of sharks that were killed just for their fins, so that these fins can be put into soup as a cultural. Activity, and I think there's, I think the Chinese are slowly coming around to the antiquated notion of that and the damage that's done. So maybe the same thing will occur with ivory in the same way, but it'll take time.
It will. It will take time, and it will take other countries stepping up to the plate too.
Yeah.
You know, China and the U.S. are just a piece of the puzzle. The UK and the EU are currently considering ivory bans, and I think we'll hear decisions there soon. Japan really needs to tackle their ivory market and has been so resistant. But recent evidence from WWF and EIA have shown that this is a market that needs to be dealt with. So, you know, it's other countries really need to step up to the plate.
Right.
So we have to start to wrap up here, but if our listeners are interested in getting involved with this issue, where should they go? What do you recommend they do?
Well, one thing you can do, I guess, is go to NRDC's website, www.nrdc.org, and I have written extensively about the issue on my blog on that website. And then there's also, you know, I think looking more into on-the-ground organizations like Eagle and seeing how you can help their efforts. I think, you know, these are people that are really risking their lives to save elephants, and they deserve to be supported 100%.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ellie.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Ellie.
That was Ellie Pepper, the Deputy Director of NRDC's Wildlife Trade Initiative.
Hey, we're running out of time. We've got to take our last couple of breaks, underwriters, and we'll be back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Big D Construction, DeJuria Center at High Star Ranch, and ESCO Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's ESCO, ESCO. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Rimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
It's time to wrap up another hour of This Green Earth, and as always, we'd like to thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, listeners like you.
Email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows.